Now, that's a band called The Struggling Kings, and kicking off Law Matters for another fortnight. Hello, welcome to the program, and thank you for tuning in. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. In the second half of our program, I'm going to be meeting for the first time a fellow by the name of Eamon Ryan, who is the inspector at the Office of the Inspector of Custodial Services, OICS, you may have heard them as. Been in the role since about 2019, took over from a fellow who used to come pretty regularly on this program called Neil Morgan, who retired after 10 years in that role. I'm looking forward to meeting Eamon Ryan and finding out about some of the reports they have been doing of lately, looking into the conditions faced by prisoners at Hakea Prison, Boronia Women's Prison. Really interesting stuff, and I tell you what, they pump out those reports and have the recommendations, and I'm going to give you an insight into just some of the terrible conditions that people behind bars are facing when we speak to Mr. Ryan in the second half of the show. And joining me for the first half, though, is CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, Wayne Nanup. Wayne, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Jodie, and hello to listeners.
And got to do a shout out to our listeners wherever you're listening from, whether you're in Boorloo. We're broadcasting out of the Noongar Radio Studios in Beaufort Street, Perth. Such a historical old building, and a bit of roof damage in recent storms. So walked across a little sticky reception area and plastic on the roof, as that's going to get fixed. We've been lashed by some terrible storms in recent weeks, so hopefully we're going to have some warmer weather around the corner. A shout out to everyone in Kununurra, listening through Warringarri Media, and 6DBY in Derby, and of course nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Great to have you tuning in. Wayne, we're going to talk about the Old Ways, New Ways program today, but before we do, we need to give an update to our community members on the fire that gutted the head office at 7 Aberdeen Street on the 25th of March. Nobody's working out of where that fire affected. What's the updates on that?
So the updates are, just so community knows, it's been 4 months since that fire, so it's been quite a journey to get ourselves to where we are, and we're starting to get some balance back in delivering services. The one thing I will say to community is that we're very close, probably at the end of this month, to have access for people who need access to ALS, and that will happen at 7 Aberdeen Street. We've just refurbed offices at the front of our building, which sits right on Aberdeen Street. So a shout out to everyone to say that we will soon be opening there. And as usual, we'll try and get back to business as usual, where when you come into our space, you'll have somewhere to sit down and talk to a lawyer. Reception will be there. We'll be able to take up those challenges that you're having in community.
I think that's one of the main things that has been noticeable, Wayne, that we're missing the community and the clients who come in, and some just pop in for a yarn, others pop in because obviously they need our services. Yeah. But it did kind of fracture staff, where you had some staff working out of A, B or C, and not all working together anymore. So it'll be wonderful to have like a shop front again where mob can turn up and have a chat.
Absolutely. It's so important to be able to do that, because when the fire happened, we lost all contact and people couldn't contact us, and it was a bit of a scramble, and we've been greatly supported by the courts, we've been supported by DPP, police, legal aid, and everybody have chipped in to assist us and offered assistance, and we've taken that, and we've been able to sort of still maintain our focus on delivery to community, so we haven't lost that, although we'd had to take instructions from court, so we advised people had matters in court just to turn up, make sure they turn up. So it was really the way in which lawyers, court officers, admin and programs, the way in which everyone sort of collaborated and chipped in and made sure we still deliver a healthy service has been amazing.
Ah, good stuff. Onwards and upwards, hey?
Onwards and upwards, and I'll say that it's going to take, where our main office is, it's going to take us 12 to 18 months. We've got to actually gut the place and start all over again. But that's been well underway, and the support they've received from senior management has been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And we've moved as quickly as we can, and we'll be back to normal as soon as we can.
Good stuff. My guest is Wayne Nanup, CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. I'm going to talk about a really important program, Wayne, that launched in October of last year called Old Ways, New Ways. Now, the Aboriginal Legal Service leads the consortium of Old Ways, New Ways and works collaboratively with the Whadjuk Northside Aboriginal Corporation, the Stephen Michael Foundation and Hope Community Services. Tell us what Old Ways, New Ways is.
I think firstly, I did endeavour to get some staff here from our program delivery, but clearly they're always busy and running programs. So maybe on the next occasion that will happen. But we have to go back a little bit, and we just know that we've had 50 years of this conversation for a long time. The program's not new. We've just been given an opportunity and a privilege to run this program. And that's been ably supported by a Justice Reinvestment Grant. And that's came out of the Commonwealth. And that's the beginnings of the program, basically. So all the consortium partners all bring a different expertise and intellect. And what we've been able to do is put the young person in the middle of this project to ensure that if they're touching or about to touch or potentially touching the justice system or are in the justice system, then we make sure that that young person feels comfortable in the program and knows everybody in the program and all their needs can be addressed as we go.
So it's a program designed to break the cycle and keep our kids out of the justice system rather than getting caught up, because I know the stats are overwhelming that, once a kid has come involved with the justice system, it just escalates from there.
Yeah, it's intervention. So I always think about the challenges around Bankshire Hill in the past, which has shown great improvement, I have to say. The trigger for that is not... The conversation was always how we improve Bankshire. Well, that's not actually we think and know that how we improve Bankshire is by not servicing or having kids go through Bankshire. So if we can get that intervention piece done and diversion happening, we're going to get greater result out of that opportunity. And not only that, it's not the simple thing of getting someone to engage who is not engaged for a long time. That's the beauty of the program. The next steps of that is how they grow in the program and how they actually deliver in these different parts of the program that we're running. And then the end result has to be it's about education and it's about employment. So you need to be able to build the foundations around young people to do that. At the same time, you're working with mum or dad, to making sure that we can help them be supported at home. Whadjuk Northside does a lot of that. So for me, I would say that closing the gap, that's what this program is about. But the end result must be income and education, because they're very important pieces.
And you mentioned Bankshire. For the benefit of our national listeners, Bankshire Hill Detention Centre is the only youth detention facility in all of Western Australia, come under the media spotlight for all of the wrong reasons in recent years. But good to hear that things are improving there, Wayne.
Yeah, I think the change has been driven by Brad Royce, effectively as the commissioner, and that's in concert with deputy commissioner, which is Rick Curtis. I just think they're doing an amazing job, and you tie that in with the Kylie as the DG for corrections. I think there's a good team there that's really showing that they can have impact on Bankshire and the way it's been delivered over the years. So there's good positive steps. There's still got a way to go, but that's a really positive. Unit 18 is still a challenge, and I do know that there have been marked improvements in there, but that's clearly they're working towards having Unit 18 shut down. And I know there's a new facility is going to be built at Bankshire Hill. Not necessarily something that we'd want to support in increasing prisons. We don't really want that, or detention centres in this case. But it needs to be understood that participating in that process is really about how are we developing the therapy that's required for young people when they do find themselves in detention. And rehabilitation should always be the focus, and always has been. That's always been the mandate, and we can't shift away from that. And I think there has been a significant shift over recent years, but it's coming back
mm-hmm.
around to making sure they're getting good education opportunities in there. They're getting better out of cell time. So these things are, and there's a very, I've seen the difference, so I can see it, but it's still a challenge.
That is reassuring. I know that, you know, so many complaints were lodged on behalf of young people in Banksia Hill and Unit 18, which was actually housed within an adult prison, but housing, you know, children who were being locked up for 24 hours a day. And there's so many breaches, and I can't imagine the trauma that will stay with a lot of those young people for years to come. So what the Old Ways, New Ways program is trying to do is keep our young people out of a situation where they might never end up there, and that's through offering culturally secure and holistic wraparound services for them. When the program was launched in October last year, Wayne, we had a media gathering at the Aboriginal Legal Service, and everyone was really interested to sit down and watch that 5-minute video about Old Ways, New Ways, and see tangible ways in which it was working with our young kids, which includes going on camp country, staying strong in culture. Can you give an idea of the process of a kid walks through the door of the Aboriginal Legal Service and is identified as, hang on a minute, this is somebody that we reckon could benefit from Old Ways, New Ways. How does the process work?
Well, the process is to get young kids into the program, clearly there's got to be identified from wherever the referral's coming. So we have a referral pathway to do that. What we're finding right now, though, is, you know, the court might say, you know, we need to refer you as part of your court processes to participate in Old Ways, New Ways. And that's fine, and we'll take that on board, and we want that.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, our capacity then becomes a challenge because now we're going from supporting 10, then 20, then 30, then 40, and then it just starts to grow. Because what's happening is the young people that come into the program go to their sister girls or brother boys, hey, you got to come over and have a go at this. And, you know, we do these different activities. We get supported in wraparound services. We can go and get, if we've got some challenges around our mental health and that, we can go and community health services. All this sort of stuff can happen. Hope Community Services, sorry. And there's just a variation of activity, which is really good, and that's defining for what's happening in the program. I think the main thing, though, is, and this is not, it's not new or not developed, but young people want to know who they are. And they want to know, when they stand on ground, what does that ground mean to them? And what's the sense of that? And how am I connected into my families? So there's lots of different nuances that sit within that for a young person because sometimes they don't know anything.
Yeah.
And then you've got to sort of go wind that back and unpack that and make sure everything's culturally secure and safe for a young person to do that. But that is the draw. The draw is I'm starting to learn about the stories of my land, what it means for me to stand on that country, how I should be relating to other people around that. The cultural empowerment that they're receiving has been a huge draw.
I think that's a really important point you raised too as well, Wayne, and it's that inclusivity where everybody's got a different story to tell. Everybody's at different stages of their own journey, and being able to come from one extreme to the other but come together in a community program that nobody's judging anyone for where they're at, even in their own cultural journey?
No, that's exactly right. They feel comfortable. But it's a matter, we know everything based on trust. So build trust and then comfortability, then they let everyone know. And then parents are feeling good about that because they're seeing progress and they're back re-engaging. And I think it's, I have to say though, it's not one person owns this program. Yeah. It is community. It's a community program, and it needs to be represented that way because it's come from community.
Yeah.
Our old people for a long time have been saying we shouldn't have kids in detention. We should be working with them hard in community, and we should be working with mum and dad.
Yep.
So we have to try to make sure that we keep pushing that barrier to ensure we get these outcomes for these young people.
And that's the key as well, because, I mean, families are struggling. I'm sure that there are a lot of situations families find them in on a day-to-day basis and feel that I'm alone, I don't know how to deal with this, or, you know, if a child's doing this or doing that and they feel unsupported. But this is bringing the whole family dynamic in. So it's not only kind of teaching the kid new skills and ways of working and dealing with some of the pressures that they might feel they're under, but also showing the parents or the extended family networks that, hey, you're not on your own. We're all in this together.
Absolutely. And I think the extension of the consortium, because we are four organisations, is other organisations. The missing pieces are there needs to be stronger investment in home.
Mm-hmm.
So home is everything. And I still remember Lenny Yaron saying to me, and he shifted my thinking on safe places, and he says the safe place for young kids is at home.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to work with mum and dad
yep.
to make sure that place becomes that. And that was a sort of a significant thing that I've learnt over the last 2 years. Is that's where our work and investment should be. The other one is, and I've had conversations with Derby Yerrigan Health Service and also Wadditch Court, and it's really about making sure young people who are in the in our program or in the system or are in Banksia, they should be afforded the opportunity to make sure that their health is properly assessed.
Mm.
And I think that those that work is about to continue. About to really, it's been crystallising over some time, I should say, but it's about to get rubber on the road between what's happening at the facility and what these providers can provide. And that way we know exactly what young person is affected by. Yeah,
and I tell you what, that Noongar grapevine works wonders, doesn't it? If you've got a couple of kids who are going through old ways, new ways, and then they're talking to their mates about it, the flow-ons are just beautiful to watch, aren't they?
Yeah, I just, it's always pleasing when... You know, I enjoy coming to work. The staff that work in our programs, and it's no different to our lawyers or court, everyone is there for a reason.
Yeah.
But with this program, the staff, I can see it. They're in a place where they feel they belong, and that's assisting young people out of where they are through their own experiences or through what they've learned over time or through their education. That's the joy of the team, you know.
Yeah.
And we've got older people in it who are exactly where they want to be, helping young people rehabilitate and prevent them from going into such places as Banksia.
Old ways, new ways. Set up to address the overrepresentation of our young people in the criminal justice system. Wayne, we'll let you go soon, but before we do, and we would never talk about names or people or families who are involved in old ways, new ways, that's not the way it works, but there must have been some beautiful moments that you've witnessed with the young people in terms of seeing their lives turn around throughout the program.
The thing about it is this is actually a lifelong exercise.
Yeah.
So, you know, these young people won't be turned away at any point and they'll always have the door open.
Yeah.
For me, I'll just give you one example. I went on the first camp, which was late last year, and you could feel that you could cut the air with a knife because these young people were bringing a lot of trauma to the space and they didn't know each other. They sort of knew each other around the traps, but they really didn't know each other, and that was the beginnings of them starting to learn a bit about themselves and about who they were with and about the program deliverer. Fast forward 9 months, so I'm able to go and privileged to attend a graduation ceremony. You know, we've got 10-week blocks of programs, and I walked into Wadjuk Northside, and you wouldn't believe what the transition has been. The comfortability was there, young people doing artwork, talking to each other, speaking to adults. Cooking the barbecue, no edge.
Wow.
So to me, I've always been asked by staff and others, you know, how do we measure this?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing you measure is, are they engaging? Mm. And that's the first step and the most important step. If you can get young people to engage, then you can start working on them.
Wow. trust plays a big role.
Huge.
The staff, hats off to them. But hats off mostly to these young kids who have achieved so much through their involvement with Old Ways, New Ways. It must be a daunting thing. They walk in and, as you say, they don't know people or they know of people on the peripheral. But well done to our young people for following through on Old Ways, New Ways, because, as you say, those benefits are going to be lifelong and it's going to be life-changing, not just for our young mob but for their families as well. The program is called Old Ways, New Ways. If you jump on the ALS website, www.als.org.au, you can find out more information about Old Ways, New Ways. And I might pop that video back up on our Facebook pages as well for you to kind of get an introduction through a video that runs for a few minutes. It's really a fantastic program, much needed, and kicking a lot of goals in the community. Wayne Nenup, thank you for your time on Law Matters.
Thank you very much.
And happy birthday.
Thanks. You had to get that one in. Thanks, Cody.
Let's have some music. This is Island and Monkey and the Turtle.
And a tortoise, them to go, and them to find it, one banana. Monkey stick for tortoise, you stop there. I go knock a banana, boy you me yeah. Bossy come, and Mr. them to. Them to fall down, belly up, yeah. You saw the slop team, you saw the dumper. Matter bully fly, fly bully, yeah. Choop, 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 choop. A monkey and a tortoise, and them to go. Them to find it, one banana. Monkey stick for tortoise, you stop ya. Yeah. I go knock a banana, boy you me yeah. Bossy come and listen to them too. Them to fall down, belly up yeah. Use of the slop team, use of a dumper. Matter bully fly, fly bully, yeah. Choop, 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 choop. To fall down, belly up there. You serve a slop team, you serve a dumper. But a bully fly, fly bully in. Choop, 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 choop. I'm drummer and boots, move you away. I'm drummer and boots. Move you in a monkey pocket turtle, a monkey pocket turtle, a monkey pocket turtle, a monkey pocket turtle. Okay. See
song, and yes it did and too. Them to fall down, belly up there. You sub a slap team, you sub a dumper. I'm at a bully fly, we fly bully, yeah. Choop choop, choop choop, choop choop, choop choop.
Yeah, it's a local band called Island and Monkey and the Turtle here on the Law Matters program, brought to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, our 15th year on air. Not sure where that's gone, but thanks for joining us throughout that journey. And I'm very pleased to introduce to our program for the first time Eamon Ryan, who is the Inspector of the Inspector of Custodial Services in Western Australia. Eamon, welcome to Law Matters. How are you?
Jodie, I'm really well, thank you.
Okay, we're going to talk about, we're going to call it OICS. It's a long name otherwise, Office of the Inspector of Custodial Services. We will call OICS. But I want to find out a bit more about you before we do that, Eamon, and let us know how long you've been with OICS and what your role is.
Okay, I've been with the office for a little over 6 years now. I'm into my second five-year contract. And I've worked in and around state and Commonwealth government for, you know, most of my life. I acted in this role when my predecessor, Neil Morgan, was unwell for about 4 or 5 months in 2016 or thereabouts. And it ignited my passion. Mm. I, you know, I thought, this is a job where you can really make a difference. And I remember going back to my old boss, and the first thing she said was, what did you learn? Mm. And I learned that I love doing something that has some purpose.
Yes.
And this job definitely has purpose.
Oh, look, absolutely. And it's a much needed job as well, Eamon, because, I mean, what you're doing is you're looking into the conditions that people are housed within prisons throughout Western Australia. When we find there's not good things going on, it splashes its headlines all over the front page of the news, as it rightfully should. You know, our prisoners have human rights and they deserve to live in decent conditions while they're incarcerated. The Office of the Inspector of Custodial Services does oversee the way that people in custody are managed. You do regular inspections and reviews of prisons and work camps, court custody centres and detention centres that are holding young people. Are you present at all those inspections, or do you have a team that goes out and reports back to you?
Yeah, we do have a team, but I will either I myself or my deputy inspector will attend every single inspection.
Yes.
And so my deputy, Jane Higgins, and I, we share the responsibility, so she will lead some inspections and I might be there as well, but there'll be one or both of us there at every inspection.
I was looking at the OICS website this week because I knew I was going to be having a yarn with you on the program. I was looking at the, and I was amazed at how many reports are coming out. Some only weeks apart, some are months apart. A lot of reports. And I was going to talk to you about a report from last month into Hakea Prison, but another report's come out yesterday about Acacia. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we released our inspection report into Acacia yesterday. And that's a bit of a better news story. Acacia's been through some really troubled times. They had a riot a couple of years ago, and then they had a fire, and so they lost a lot of their industries. And, you know, so it was sort of set back on their heels. And to their credit, they recovered really well. They, you know, made up for the fact that they had almost no employment available for the prisoners that were held there. And they, you know, they did a good job, and I have to be balanced and say, you know, look, no prison is perfect, far from it. But I give credit where credit's due. They did a good job, and one of the really pleasing things they did was they created this broad network of peer support for the guys in prison. So they have a program for veterans, they have a program for older prisoners, prisoners serving life or very long sentences, prisoners, young prisoners, they have a special unit where they try to keep them together and give them activities. But one of the most interesting things, one of the most pleasing things is they've got a great cultural support network. They've got a couple of people up there who are First Nations people, and they're just doing a great job. It's really innovative. You know, there's you know, prisons from around the country looking at what they're doing because it's so good. And you know, and I take my hat off to that. That's all them. And there's a, I won't name them, but there's a couple of people who are leading that, and the director of the prison is supporting it, and it's a great piece of work. It's something I'd love to see in every prison in Western Australia.
Oh, we like a good news story. We need a good news story, Eamon Ryan. And I guess through your role as the Inspector of OIICS, you're getting an insight into the people behind the statistics, that unless you're a lawyer, a court officer, a visitor, a family member or a worker within the prison system, you don't get that insight. You just hear about the blanket term of prisoners, or there was a riot here, or there's inhumane conditions here. You're actually getting to meet these people and talk to them, and you've got a human vibe of where they're coming from, hey?
Yeah, that's probably the thing that I've said to most people that is most impactful for me personally.
Yes.
Is the fact that you get to go and talk to people in prison. And sadly, you're often seeing them at their best. You know, they're not surrounded by poverty or disadvantage. They're if they have some form of addiction, that they're getting some support and help for it. But that's an absolute privilege. You know, and you talk to particularly First Nations people, and when you're up in the bush, it's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
You know, this middle-aged white fella from Perth, and he gets up and he sits up in the Pilbara or the Kimberley and on a rock and yarns with a bloke who's out from a traditional community. It's just amazing. It really is.
It's pretty special, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as I say, most people would never have these interactions, but it's because of those interactions that you actually learn where someone's coming from, and you learn about the differences in cultural protocols and different ways of living and being. People think, oh, you know, you're an Aboriginal person in WA. Well, there are so many dialects from A to B to C to D, and so many different ways of living. It's a wonderful insight that you get to see.
And so much we should learn from Aboriginal culture and, you know, family obligations and, like, no one's left behind. If I've got two, you can have one.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which we sadly don't see in the broader society. It's often, I'm in it for myself. So, you know, I've learnt and grown so much from having a small involvement and interaction with that culture. And obviously, you know, you live and breathe it every day and you're blessed for that. But it is a privilege, and it is it's also sad because you see the disadvantage, and you see the you know, the lack of, you know, the kinds of services and facilities that should have in prisons, and sadly they often don't.
I want to talk about Hakea Prison, which is in Perth, and there was a lot of concerns outlined in a visit to the prison last year about prisoners being held in inhumane conditions. So enter OIICS. What happens? What's the process?
Okay, so I'll go back a little bit in a little bit of recent history. In April 2024, we were there for a normal inspection, and we were so concerned about conditions that we issued what we call a show cause notice, which is just a notice of saying there's an immediate problem that needs to be fixed. We sent that to the department with our concerns, and it went to the minister, and that generated some immediate response. We then carried on and wrote our inspection report, which was published in May this year, and that detailed all of that. So that made all of that information public, you know, all the work that we've been doing behind the scenes. We also, in the meantime, had published, done more work, and we published another report just in July, which was essentially an update. So, you know, have we progressed? Have things improved? And there have been some small improvements, but prisoners are still held in conditions that just fail to meet basic standards. You know, there's international standards called the Nelson Mandela Rules, and it's named after the man himself, in honour of him. Mm. And many occasions, the men in Hakea, and more broadly across many prisons in Western Australia, are just not being held in conditions that meet that meet those basic standards. You know, they're held in their cells for too long. They don't get access to, you know, daily showers often and clean clothes often. They're not getting out for fresh air. Most importantly, they struggle to maintain contact with family, which your listeners will be very interested in. Mm. You know, their access to the phones is restricted and limited. Their access to visits, in-person visits, are often restricted. And that takes an enormous toll, particularly on First Nations fellas in there. You know, they need to maintain that contact to stay strong.
Yes.
And if it's not available, you know, that's a real problem. And I have to say, you know, I have to be balanced. It's often not because the officers or the staff or the people running the jail can't be bothered or don't want to. It's they just don't have the staff. They just don't have the resources. Mm. So it's a system problem as much as it is an individual problem.
So what do you do then when improvements aren't made in a timely manner that, you know, you're kind of saying, well, you know, you've done your follow-up report and you've done that written that report in July last month and you're kind of going, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah. I would have hoped that we would have been a bit more advanced in improving the situation by now. What happens then?
Well, I guess, you know, my job is to inspect and report, and I do that, and I do that to the best of my ability. The job then is for people in power and people of influence, so whether that's, you know, the minister, the government, the politicians, or, you know, the department heads, and, you know, to put forward cases and make the argument for reform. But, you know, it's I'm not an activist, and, you know, I see the role of, you know, people who want to raise those issues as complementary to mine. I report factually and balanced, and then, you know, someone else can pick that up and say, you know, we really need to do something so to generate that community support. Another important part of what we do is things like I'm doing now, talking to you, and that is broadcast to your listeners, so getting the information out. There's often a lot of media, you know, particularly when there's some sort of negative or criticism in our reports, and that gets it out and raises public awareness about the conditions in prison and that people in the community, not just family of people who are in prison, but everybody in the community should be really concerned about that and should be lobbying and asking hard questions.
Yes.
Why is it? You know, like we're seeing in the newspaper today, people concerned about the conditions in hospitals, we need to have that same level of concern about what's happening in prisons. And there's a really good reason for that. Almost everybody who's in prison today is going to be out sometime. Mm. They're going to be standing next to you at the football or at the shopping centre, and you want them to come out of prison better than they went in.
That's right. My guest is Eamon Ryan, the Inspector of Custodial Services in Western Australia. Eamon, I want to talk about an inspection last year, or actually before we talk about Boronia Women's Pre-Release. How many prisons do we have in Western Australia? I know there's only the one youth detention centre, Banksia Hill. How many prisons?
So there's 17 prisons, five work camps in Western Australia. And there are actually two youth detention centres. There's Banksia Hill, and then there's the Unit 18 within Casuarina.
Yes.
And that's a designated youth detention facility. And so we are required to inspect all of those at least once every 3 years, and also court custody centres. So, you know, that part of the court where people are held in custody or two or three police lockups that are designated as court custody centres. So just to map where people are held in custody to make sure that those conditions are, you know, meeting standards.
Okay. Tell us about the Boronia Pre-Release Centre for Women. Where's it located, and can you paint a picture of what it's like for us?
So I like talking about Boronia because it is a good facility. It's located in Bentley, so just near Curtin University. And from the outside, it doesn't look like a prison. It's got a high cyclone mesh fence, but it doesn't have the big security bollards and things that you see in most prisons. And that's because most of the women who are sent there are coming to the end of their sentence. It's a pre-release centre, so it's a centre that prepares women for integration back into the community. And it's a good facility that, you know, it's it only holds about 70 or 80 women when it's full, but they live in individual houses, they look after themselves, they some women can have children with them up to, I think it's about maybe 12 months old. So when you go in there, you see a different vibe. It doesn't feel like a prison. You feel... it's like, you know, it's almost like a specialist care centre for young women or women generally. You know, so I like going there because it's one of those places you see good things happening. Yes. You see good outcomes for the women who are held there. I mean, it's not perfect. You know, there could be some better grief and you know, counselling support for many of the women who are there, but they do a pretty good job.
Oh, that's... Yeah. As I say, we like the good news stories.
Yeah, there's not enough of them. But
there's not enough of them. And I tell you one that had us all so upset and advocating for fiercely for many years has been the situation at Roebourne Prison and the lack of air conditioning. Is that was that under your radar and investigating claims into that?
Yeah, we've been writing about the temperature conditions in Roebourne for as long as this office has been in existence, so going back 20 years.
Wow.
And so they've just, I think, just finished installing the air conditioning in the second...
I'm going to stop you, Eamon. For the benefit of our listeners nationally, you have been to Roebourne. I've been to Roebourne. Paint a picture of what it's like, because the heat conditions up there are harsh. You know, it can be excessive 50 degrees. Paint a picture of, you know, you drive into town in Roebourne so that people know the environment we're talking about.
It's hot.
Yes.
We were there for our last inspection. We deliberately went at the end of summer, so we went there at the end of February, early March. And just to give you an idea, the Pilbara is stunningly beautiful, but it's stark.
Yes.
It's the colours but the climate and the environment is pretty stark.
Yes.
We were there, and you know, at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, you open the door of your car or your hotel, and it's like when you open the oven and you've got something in the oven, you get that burst of hot air.
Yeah.
So that's what it's like. And so the conditions in the prison, you know, it's a steel and concrete and cinder block facility. Prisoners are locked in their cells at night, often, you know, several men, four, six perhaps, and the doors are closed and there are small air vents, even type louver type vents, but the air coming out from outside is, you know,
it's
at
hot.
Night at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, it's 32 degrees.
Jeez.
And so the condition's really tough.
Yes.
And I remember being up there and speaking to a fella who was out from the Matu lands, and I said to him, what's it like here? And he said, oh, it's hot, boss. And I said, you know, what do you do at home? And he looked at me as if it was a stupid question. He said, I turn the aircon on. And I thought, okay, that's the answer, you know. So, they've just recently completed the air conditioning works. And so there's the air conditioning and the visits we've had up there since then is that, there's a better vibe in the prison.
Of course there would be.
Because people are getting a rested night's sleep. You know, it's not... You know,
it's fully operational now, is it?
Yep, it is. And
finally.
So that's I give credit to the department and to the government for funding that, because that's a good outcome. You know, like everything in the Pilbara and the Kimberley, you know, it's going to break down and there's going to be issues, you know, when it needs maintenance and those sorts of things. But it's a really positive step forward.
But the, that oppressive heat and the effect that would have had on their mental health and their physical well-being for so many years. And, I'm very glad to hear. I hadn't heard the outcome of that, so I'm very glad to hear that is now. And is that in all areas of the prison, that the air conditioning?
Certainly the accommodation areas.
It is.
There were other areas of the prison, like the recreation room and library, that had already been air-conditioned, but it was those big accommodation blocks. There's two at Roebourne, and they weren't air-conditioned, but they are now, so the men up there have some respite for those, you know, bitterly hot summer months.
Oh, which are unrelenting. Yeah. They are so, so hot. I remember driving from Karratha to Roebourne one day and I was just overcome by the heat. It's a different heat.
Yeah, it's hot and dry. We get hot days here. You know, there's every summer we get 2 or 3 days of over 40 degrees. Well, they get that for months on end. And, you know, a year or so ago that it was 55 degrees.
Wow.
You know, we get to 45 degrees and everybody's, you know, melting. So that's another 10 degrees.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so the overnight temperature doesn't go below 32, 33 degrees.
Yes.
It's really tough conditions.
What's the office working on at the moment?
Oh, what aren't we working on? So we've got four reviews, review reports that are coming close to finalisation, and they're on looking at non-custodial staffing, mm-hmm. you know, shortages and the impact that has on prisons. So that's like clinical staff or program staff, that kind of thing. We're looking at workers' compensation trends and the impact that has on prisons, so high rates of workers' compensation in the Department of Corrections. So we're looking at that. We're looking at how effective the system is in allowing prisoners to maintain contact with families. And that's a follow-up review. We did some work on that about 5 or 10 years ago, mm-hmm. and that's a follow-up. And we're looking at how the women's estate manages services for pregnant women. So we're in the process of doing that. We've got a couple of inspections that we've done, and we're actually writing the reports up. And so that includes the five work camps, a Broome Regional Prison, and also Wandoo Rehabilitation Prison. And we've got two inspections coming up in the rest of the year. So the next one is in October in Casuarina, and that'll be our biggest inspection for the year. Casuarina is a huge prison. Mm. And then after that, we're going to Roebourne, I think it is. Yes, Roebourne in November. So it'll be good to get up there and keep in touch with the people up there and just see how the fellas are coping with having, you know, better conditions with the air conditioning.
Before we let you go, you mentioned there's five work camps throughout Western Australia. How do they operate?
So the work camps are sort of they're a satellite of a host prison. So yep. There are work camps in Walpole, which is linked to Pardalup Prison. There's one in Dowran, which is linked with Wooraloo Prison. There's one in Roebourne, which is pretty much on the grounds of Roebourne. Yes. And there's one in Wyndham, which is linked to Broome Prison, and then there's one at Warburton out in the Lands that's linked to Eastern Goldfields, and they're basically small facilities that allow men who are rated as, you know, lower security. It allows them to live in an environment that's certainly not like a jail, but it's not like a community, but it's a much lower security. Most of them go out and do work in the community, or they do work for the community within the work camp. And they learn skills, they learn, employment, they learn trade skills, they have some education, they have some programs. So it's just a nice way and an effective way to reintegrate men
yeah.
back into their communities. Sadly, it's only a small number. It's 100 or so men get to go to the work camps. They don't have a work camp for women. You know, put out a big shout out for that. That would be fantastic
if they did.
But, you know, they're a good exit point for suitably assessed men when they're leaving prison.
Wow, wouldn't it be great if we lived in a society where we build more work camps and not more prisons?
Yes, yes.
Wouldn't that be ideal? Eamon Ryan, it's been lovely to meet you on Law Matters.
Yep.
And we've had a chat while the song was playing, and we're going to do some more talks more regularly here on the Law Matters program, just to keep our listeners up to date with the work of OICS, the Office of the Inspector of Custodial Services, but also reports, both good and bad, coming out of the prisons, and try and make sure that any improvements that need to happen are happening in a prompt time frame. Thanks for your time.
Yep.
Eamon Ryan, joining us on Law Matters. Let's have some music, and when we return, I'm going to let you know all about the John Toohey Oration this year, which is going to be presented by none other than Wayne Nanup, CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service. So let's have some music first. This is Jeeva and Flower Park.
She's walking the edge of the garden, coloured flowers along the path. Walking down, running down to Happy Lane, to no man's land of shame. You're on the game now, when the life becomes so hard.
we're just about out of time on Law Matters for another fortnight. I would like to thank you for your company and thank my guests on the program this fortnight, Eamon Ryan, the Inspector of the Office of Custodial Services, and Wayne Nanup, CEO of the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. I wanted to let you know, if you are in Perth, that Wayne is actually going to be presenting the TUI Oration at the UWA Law School Public Lecture Theatre on Wednesday the 17th of September from 5:30 until 7 o'clock. He joins an illustrious list of people who have given the oration before, including the Honourable Virginia Bell AC, the Honourable Robert French AC, the Honourable Justice Michelle Gordon, Greg McIntyre SC, Fred Cheney AO, Malcolm McCusker. The list goes on. So it's going to be a really, really interesting chat from Wayne Nanup, a reflection on Wayne's experiences working within the criminal justice system in Western Australia. He brings a wealth of knowledge to this area and a strong commitment, explaining the complex issues that do face our First Nations peoples within the justice system. So if you would like more information, jump onto the University of Western Australia website and Google the John Tuohy Oration. It's a biannual oration organised by the UWA Law School, started back in 1998, and Wayne will be this year's deliverer of it, Wednesday the 17th of September 2025. Thank you for your company, and we look forward to again in a fortnight's time.